Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you're getting off to a great start on your week as well. We got a little Last Dance. We got a little cowboy action, all of that good stuff. But LZ, you said you have some breaking news?
Yes, yes, yes. I have breaking news. I won our last competition with 60% of the vote.
I like how
when I win, this seems to slip through the news cycle, but when Travis wins, it's the headline.
Well, I just look. I got a lot of balls up in the air on any given day. You know what I mean? It's just that sometimes stuff falls through the cracks, LZ. This happens to be one of those times.
We're here.
What can I tell you?
Let me help fill some of those cracks. I won with 60% of the vote. Keyshawn was second with 21% of the vote. And pulling in the rear was Travis at 19%.
All right, man, move on. Nobody don't really care about that, man.
And what we did.
The Last Dance.
Yo, listen, 20%. You hush up now. It was the best bad food for the snake draft. Keyshawn had the first overall pick, and he picked Mr. Trubisky. And that's the reason why he is out.
Yeah, well, if I'm in third, I'm really going to let
If I had the first class. Overall pick, I'd pick Michael Jordan and not Isaiah Thomas. How about that?
Yeah. Travis, what's the tally then? What's the tally real quick on our
I think LZ's got three, I've got two, and Key's got one. I think so. I don't know, but I think that's right.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know if this is like a metaphysical question or what, but you guys tell me. Can you have a gambling problem if you have so much money that you can never get in trouble?
Yes.
You can.
Yes.
Yes.
So does Michael Jordan have a gambling problem?
No.
Go on.
Why not?
Well, because he likes to compete in certain things, and it's not gamblers. Gambler, he has a competition problem, much like he said. He's competitive at certain things. If I feel like I got to sit in the casino 3, 4, 5 times a week, that's a gambling problem. But when I stop at a casino because I'm bored out of my mind and I'm sitting in New York City and I want to get away from the negativity and the press and the people outside of my hotel room and LZ stalking me in the lobby and all those sort of things, then I'll go out the back door, get in my car, take a drive with my dad. My father decided to go to Atlantic City because we had downtime and I wasn't going to sit in my damn room and I didn't want to walk around New York. So we decided to do this. Doesn't mean I have a gambling problem because I bet on
that one instance.
Because I
doesn't
bet,
mean he has a gambling problem.
I was getting ready to move on, coach.
Okay.
And because I decide that I'm going to bet on golf because this is something that not only is the golf game fun, but I'm betting on golf like most people do that play golf. You and your buddies bet on golf. Y'all might not bet money, but you certainly bet beers and dinners and all the other stuff. That
sure.
Doesn't mean you have a gambling problem. Because I said to you, I'm having some fun doing my downtime, and I'm going to flip a coin up against the wall to see who's stopped closest to the wall for $20, doesn't mean I have a gambling problem. It means that I have a competition problem. I like to compete. Because I sit and I say to you, I'm going to hit this free throw from the bench. I mean, not the free throw. I'm going to hit the shot from sitting at the bench for $100. Let's see who gets it in first. Doesn't mean I have a gambling problem. It just means the wages, we're putting something on it from a competition standpoint. That's all it means.
The competition standpoint is the win or the loss.
Once yeah, but we add
money,
some. We, but we add some extra to it. It,
yeah,
it may not
gambling.
Even be about money. It might be. It might be about. It might be about who could do this more or who could do that more.
Listen,
if we hit this shot. Doesn't mean he has a gambling problem.
I don't know if he has a gambling problem or not. But what I do know is, from what I've witnessed, he's addicted to gambling, and I think those are two different things. Because just to be a competitor, you don't need to gamble in order to be competitive.
No, it makes it juicier, though. It makes it juicier.
It makes it gambling.
I don't have. I've never had a gambling. I've never had a gambling problem, but I've bet on stuff when me and my boys have done things and said, "Man, let's see who can kick this field goal. I got $100. I'm gonna kick it, not and make it." And you know, I've done that. I've done that. I bet on my pickup basketball team, which is when you could play pickup basketball during the off season. Don't say anything to anybody. But I bet on my team to beat the other teams. Doesn't mean I got a gambling problem. It just means that's what it is.
If it were
we're on the plane and we're traveling and everybody takes their per diem and puts it in the pot and we start drawing out names or whatever the hell we were doing to see who gets the pot, does that mean we have a gambling problem? No, it just means that we're in a competition. And for that, here's the prize.
I think you've just described a textbook gambling problem.
It's not a gambling problem. This is why MJ left y'all ass alone, because y'all want to make it a problem when it's not. You want to set it that way when it's not.
If every single thing I do is the per diem, the golf, the casinos, the pitching quarters against the wall. If every single aspect.
So when
of
he
my
goes up, when he goes up to the front,
a few bucks here or there. If every interaction I have is based on winning or losing a bet, that sounds like a gambling problem.
But
I know
he's not in any financial difficulty.
It's
not based on. It's not based on having a gambling problem. When you walk up to the front of the plane and you tell somebody, "I want to play with y'all." And they tell you that it's not the type of money you play with. He's like, man, I ain't got nothing to do. I just want to get your money
to say that.
I got your money. It's not a gambling problem.
That's a competition problem. No, but he needed the action. It's not the money. No. Like the gambling guys.
I clearly see why.
It's the action.
I clearly see why MJ for 2 to 3 weeks did not talk to people like y'all.
Key, it is literally the definition of gambling addiction.
I can see because you want to take it and make it that.
No, you're literally.
No,
you're literally.
That's not a gambling. It's a competition. I am a competitor. I want to compete.
Hold on.
And this gives me something to compete for.
If it were the competitive part, you just say, "Hey, right now, let's do this. Let's do it." Let's do this. And oh, by the way, there's money involved. That's the gambling component.
Because
of it.
This is why a guy, to fuel me to get you.
This is why a guy like Slim Buhler, right, who can go out there and just bleed him on the golf course, because he's
Slim Buhler got 57 racks out of him too.
Yeah. And he didn't realize it's like, all right, let's go play for beers or dinner or whatever. And I understand.
But beers ain't enough. I don't want to play for beers.
Let me finish. I understand that he doesn't want to play for beers because it doesn't get the juices flowing. This is the point. It needs to be something that does get his juice flowing, because it's not just a matter of beating that guy on the golf course. It's he wants to take the money. He wants the win. If it was just the competition, he could go out there and take Slim Buhler and Richard Esquinas's, you know, he could win the golf match, but it's not that. It's the action, and that they're able to suck him in like that leads you to believe that the guy had a hard time saying no to a bet, which is a gambling problem.
And when you
and
go
on top
to,
of that, why is it a problem if I could afford to do it anyway?
Hold on. I just visited two different websites that deal with addictions. And when
it comes specifically to gambling, professor.
This is exactly what it says. Having an obsessive preoccupation with gambling, needing to gamble with increasing amounts of money just to get the same thrill, feeling restless or irritable when unable to gamble. I mean, Jesus Christ, Key. It's like, I don't know. There's a difference.
If I could afford to gamble, why is it a problem?
This is why I started this.
Why is it a problem?
Conversation. No, hold
I didn't
on.
Say it was this, a problem. I said it was an addiction. That's a difference.
This is why I started the whole.
What are you addicted to?
That can you have a gamble? If I have an endless amount of money, which for all intents and purposes Michael Jordan does, he will never ever run out of money. Can you have a gambling problem, or does it only become a problem when your exposure outweighs your assets? When I owe $1 million and I got $1,000. Do I have a problem there? But if I owe
that's
a billion,
when you have
a
problem.
Billion,
that's when you. That's when you have a problem. You have
that's,
a problem.
But that's,
when
that's different than that's what you said you at the beginning of the conversation.
Excuse me.
That's different than what we said at the beginning.
No, it is different, because the reason it's different is because you just said if I owe $1 million and I got $1,000, that's when you got a problem. If I got $4 billion and I owe $1 million, I ain't got no problem.
Right.
Because I didn't take myself all the way to the edge. So, therefore, there is no problem.
Which is why I said, I don't know if he has a problem, but I know he has an addiction.
I think he has an addiction with competitiveness, but that's about it. That's just me.
Yeah, I tend to come out on it as if you've got the money to cover whatever bet you make, then it's really not a problem. I mean, by the textbook definition, LZ, perhaps he's got an addictive, you know, personality towards gambling. But if I can never get in trouble.
But why is that? Let me ask you a question, though, Mr. Journalist LZ Grandison, Chicago University, Northwestern teacher and all that other good stuff. Why do we care? Why is that? Why are we always so interested in caring about what MJ is doing with his money?
All right. Well, first of all, just in terms of journalism,
just in terms of journalism,
reporting on a person's private life isn't really beneficial to anyone. You're right. However, if you find out that the private life is actually influencing the professional life, well, now that's a conversation to be had, a la Pete Rose. So I'm not going to sit here and say that if someone is in the midst of a playoff game or series and you see them gambling in the casino, that you should ignore it. I don't think you should ignore it. Now, you shouldn't treat it like it's, you know, like it's World War One is about to break loose. But that could be a string. And if you pull on it, you see what else is there. Why? Because we have seen examples, even in the NBA, of people who like to gamble actually infiltrating the professional career with the gambling issue. So that's the reason why it's an issue to care
about. You got
to
remember, once
David Stern said that there was no connection between the two, then it's squashed. But you definitely need to do that kind of work, because we've seen examples of players of all ranks gambling the sport they're playing in.
Do you have a gambling problem if you betting on games like a Pete Rose?
Is that
a gambling problem? That's a gambling problem. Because Jordan didn't bet on games.
No.
Jordan didn't bet on games. Are you an alcoholic if you drink all single day long but you don't get drunk? Is that a problem?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm just asking.
Well, ask your liver.
So if you drink all day, you don't get drunk, is that a problem?
Ask
you said
doctor.
What, LZ?
Ask your doctor what they say.
I'm just saying.
A problem.
Because I don't believe Jordan got it a problem. I think it's all competition, okay? And the reason I take it and reason I feel that way is because that's how I am. I like to compete in certain stuff. You think I raced Marcellus and was drinking margaritas beforehand because I thought that he was going to beat me and I needed some extra juice? No.
Not margarita juice.
I drank because I wasn't worried about him beating me, because he wasn't going to beat me.
Did you gamble on your race?
He didn't want to. Yeah, I did. I did. I put up $4,000. Was it $4,000, Raj? Oh, I put up. Well, you was there, Jorge, wasn't you?
I don't remember that part of it, but
I put up. No, I put up 4,000 with the Kelvin dude. What with Kelvin?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Does that mean I got a gambling problem?
There's a different problem.
Oh, stop! There you go. Changing the narrative. Move along. Let's go
to
something
exactly
else.
Exactly what I said at the very beginning. There's addiction, and then there's a problem.
The Cowboys gave a quarterback some money, but not the guy that you think. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. So the Cowboys scratched a check to a quarterback, but not Dak Prescott. Cowboys got a gambling problem. No, they have a paying Dak Prescott problem, because they gave Andy Dalton $3 million. It could go up to as high as $7 million, depending on how much he plays. I get that Dez Bryant was offended by it. I get the Cowboy fans are always going to overreact to things, but this one seems pretty easy to me, Key. They went out and got a really good backup quarterback to back up Dak, because they're going to pay Dak eventually.
Yeah, it's a backup. They didn't get this. They didn't sign Andy Dalton thinking that, okay, Dak Prescott's going to hold out. We got an insurance policy. They got an insurance policy just in case something happens to Dak Prescott. Plus, you need other competition. It's $3 million. Okay, a veteran backup. Mariota got $8 million. So this is what you're paying a veteran backup that's won more games than Mariota and has probably a better career thus far than a guy like Mariota, a guy like Jameis Winston. So when you look at that, you pay that type of money to a guy like that. It's not going to cost you much. He's never going to get to the $7 million, I don't think. So it's $3 million bucks.
He probably
and on top of that, they didn't do him any favors, the Cincinnati Bengals, by releasing him when they released him. They didn't release him before free agency. They basically released him at the end of free agency. So there's no real jobs available to compete. Obviously, the New England Patriots feel good about Stenham and didn't want to do anything with him. So, you know, Jacksonville feels good about Minshew, so they didn't want to do anything with him. So there's not – the Chargers are happy with what they have. So there's really no teams that are left. So everything now is that backup-type position, which Andy Dalton fits in. He fits in that backup. Yeah, backup. Now, you had your success. You were a second-round quarterback. You were not a first-rounder. You a second-round guy who fits into that mold of career backup. That's for moving forward. That's what he's going to be. Unlike when I told you before, when you a one, they're going to always keep you to a degree as a one, which means they're going to give you opportunity after opportunity after opportunity when you're a first-round pick. When you're a second-round pick, they're not – when you drop out of the first round for whatever weird reason, they don't continue to give you that opportunity to lead a franchise. But when you're a first-round pick, they give you an opportunity to lead a franchise. You say, well, how could that be when Mariota's backing up Carr for now?
And I don't subscribe to this, but the conventional wisdom that was out there was this puts pressure on Dak to sign his deal because they have a plan B in place. It just doesn't feel like that to me. It just feels like they're negotiating, that maybe some feelings are involved on some level, but this is going to happen. That for a variety of reasons, because of the pandemic, because of a whole bunch of stuff that's going on, it just hasn't happened yet. But Andy Dalton signing with the Cowboys does not mean that Dak Prescott becomes less likely to sign with the Cowboys. It's exactly the same.
It is. I mean, at the end of the day, nothing changes for him. I mean, yeah, there are people out there that don't understand the situation, like Dez Bryant, who said some stuff that just was like, what are you talking about, Dez? The dude's paying $3 million, okay? Yeah, they signed Tony Romo to deals. Tony Romo, I think, and LZ got a quick computer, he'll find out before I finish, that Tony Romo, most money he ever made, I believe, was $17 million in a year. Different than where we are today. And Tony Romo is such the type of guy that's not going to push the envelope. If they offered Tony Romo $65 million, he'd tell him to give him $59 million and I'm okay, not give me $75 million. He just does, that's not his personality. Where Dak Prescott was drafted in the fourth round and probably in his mind believes they owe him for those 4 years of not being paid. And he got an agent that's pushing the envelope.
Tony Romo made $17 million or more in a season only three times during his 14-year career.
See, I not even having a computer in front of me, not cheating, not just kind of knowing where the league was at that position at that time when Tony was playing. So it's different. Yeah, they gave Tony the money, but I bet you, Tony, you don't read anywhere in anything where Tony Romo was kind of had a relationship, a strained sort of kind of confrontational relationship.
Has it gotten strained and confrontational with Dak, Key? Do you think it's at that point where it's not just, okay, we're negotiating. Has it gotten, to use your words, strained and confrontational?
It only becomes confrontational and strained in the media, I would say, because the player hasn't said anything. It's more the agent leaking things out to the media and the media using it to write it. That's kind of that, what y'all call it, passive-aggressive path, or whatever you say, that is what has been done. Well, they don't want to pay him. They only offered – remember I told you eventually they're going to come out with the numbers. Somebody's going to put the numbers out there. Somebody's going to do this to make it sound a certain way, and that's what happened.
Is there a situation in which you can see Dak Prescott playing anywhere else?
No, it's not going to happen. Not a chance.
Well, then he has no leverage.
But it's not leverage to have, though, LZ. They've already offered him $30-plus million, right? So you already in the – we're in the arena. Now we just got to find our seat, okay? We went up from the upper decks down to the loge to the field level. Now we got to find our seat. Where's our seat? We're in the stadium. Where's the seat? They're getting to they're asking the ushers right now, where's the seat? You know, the ushers are saying, hold on, I'm going to help Mr. and Mrs. Rogers find their seats. We'll be right back. That's what they're doing. And then eventually when we come to September, the seat will be found. There's no rush. The game hasn't started yet. They're missing no time. They're warming up. Oh, that was good. See, I did an LZ right there.
Well, if they're searching for the seats key, and we know the section they're in, and we know that it's in the, you know, the second row or the third row or wherever it is.
But you're in
line. There's only 10 seats in the row. Why can't
we
move
you to the front of the line? We still got six other people we need to sit down. We're getting to you. We already gave you your tickets. You're in the stadium. The ushers are helping other people right now. The game doesn't start till September. By the time we come up from the bottom back up to the top of the stairs, we'll be ready to bring you to your seats right before kickoff. That's where they're at.
What else do they have to get done?
Well, they just got to figure out what the years are. As Nui Scruggs said on our show earlier, that it's about the years. It's the last couple years on the deal. Dak Prescott wants to be at a four-year deal like Carson Wentz and all the other guys to be able to have his own choice what he wants to do come free agency or push them to franchise tag him. And they're saying, we'll pay you the money over the 4 years, but we want the other two so it can be our choice so we don't have to use the franchise tag because we can only use one tag now. We don't have a transition to use. We don't have a franchise. We got to pick one or the other and under this new collective bargaining agreement. So, therefore, if we elect to franchise tag you, we'll do it. If we elect to let you walk because you stunk up the joint and didn't get us a Super Bowl, we'll do it. But if you ball out, we'll pay you. And he's saying, no, I want the choice to be mine. And they're saying, no, we're paying
Tony
you Kukoc. For those rights.
Tony Kukoc finally showed up in The Last Dance last night. We'll get into what he had to say and the way that he got treated in the Olympics. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
So it took what? It took the fifth episode before we finally got a look at Tony Kukoc on camera. We'd seen him in some highlights, but it was the first time we got to see Tony. And, of course, they started with the 92 Olympics when Team USA and Michael and Scotty in particular just destroyed him, just absolutely destroyed him in that first matchup. Tony Kukoc did a little better in the gold medal game, but you could tell 30 years later, Tony Kukoc is still like, what did I ever do to those guys? I mean, you could tell that he never really got together with the other stars on that team.
Well, because first of all, he's coming from another country. He didn't really know. He probably wasn't really following the NBA at that level, so he never really knew what was going on with Jerry Krause and Pip and Jordan and the guys that was there. So, and he mentioned that it just wasn't something that he was really paying attention to. He had no idea. He's like, I'm just trying to play basketball. And then at the end of the day, MJ and Pip didn't like the way they was disrespecting the situation, Jerry Krause. Jerry Krause trying to make him the next Magic Johnson left-hander. At the end of the day, they're like, okay, him? Oh, yeah, we're getting ready to do something to him. And that happens in – no, that happens in – man – boy, if I couldn't get into trouble, I'd tell you some stories where you'd be like, where teams would talk to you about players on your team, and they would say, watch what we do to him. We get ready to show this dude because they understand it becomes somewhat of a political BS game, and people don't want to play that. And Jerry Krause clearly was doing that, not only with him, but several other players, and they just wasn't having it. Like MJ said about Dan Morley. Like, you getting ready to turn this dude. You talking about this dude is like that? Oh, yeah, he getting ready. Okay.
I couldn't believe that. I thought for sure Michael was making that up just to give himself some extra motivation.
Dan Morley was a good player.
No. I know Dan Morley was an excellent player. Went to Central Michigan University, Thunder Dan. I know the whole nine. But I don't recall anyone characterizing him as a Jordan stopper in any way.
It wasn't necessarily a Jordan stopper as opposed to he's like the best defender in the league type. That's what they was trying to position him as because of his length and his size and his athletic ability.
All of this stuff comes back to them wanting to shove it down Jerry Krause's throat. Because keep in mind,
absolutely.
This is when Jerry Krause is saying that Tony – think about this, guys. In the midst of their first three consecutive titles – Jerry Krause is telling anyone that will listen that Tony Kukoc is the future of the Bulls. You've got Michael bleeping Jordan and Scottie Pippen, and this short, heavy-set guy is saying, you know what the future of this team is? It's this skinny Croatian dude. I mean, of course they're going to be terribly offended by it. Of course they're going to go out of their way to humiliate him in the Olympics. Tony Kukoc didn't do anything wrong. Jerry Krause never understood that by opening his mouth, he was working against himself with the guys that were currently on his team.
Absolutely. That was the problem. You got this dude who ain't from here. Y'all act like this dude like that. Okay. Well, we getting ready to show you he ain't. I don't care what he did in the gold medal game. They still got waxed. But we getting ready to show you in the one game, we going to trade off. And like he said, he ain't never seen somebody glued to him, like glued to him everywhere he went. He ain't never seen that before. He's like, man, these brothers here, they all over me.
There was really not much he could do. But the important thing to remember is that, and this is to Tony's credit, he still came. And he still showed up.
And played well.
And played extremely well. And in all likelihood, he'll eventually be voted. He hasn't been voted in yet, but his career is a Hall of Fame career, and he will be voted in as a Hall of Famer, which would give that Bulls team four Hall of Famers plus a Hall of Fame coach all on one squad. So Tony did his part. He just got blindsided about some politics that he wasn't even aware of.
But it was just one of those things, too, that when Scotty, after the not the gold medal game, but the round robin game, where he said, yeah, he's just not tough enough to make it 82 games in the regular season. It's like, even Charles at that point's like, hold on a second. He just went up against the team with the 10 best players in the league. What are we talking about here? Give the guy a chance. And then he did bounce back. And you're right, Key, they got smoked in the gold medal game, but he did play better. And he clearly had NBA ability. I mean, he came to the league and had a great deal of success in the league, was part of the second group of three championships in a row. But Scotty was just so blinded by his hatred for Jerry Krause that he took it out on Tony Kukoc by saying, oh, he's not tough enough. Of course he is. He lasted a long time in the NBA and did really well.
No, he did well, and that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with that. But at that moment, that one game, it just showed, you know, they just wanted him. They wanted to prove a point to Jerry Krause. I bet you Jerry Krause felt that, too. He felt it. That woo. And they reminded him every chance they got, I promise you. They walked up to him and said, now what? That's your boy, now what?
Could Krause have been a genius in the sense that he was doing all this on purpose to get that out of those guys? Was just a byproduct?
It just happened that way. And none of the, they was legit regardless of when he said that. Think about it. They was already good.
No, they were great. Were great. But Jerry Krause is a really deeply unlikable guy. There's no two ways about that. He absolutely is. But his ability to identify talent, his ability to win, and his ability to get the most out of his guys, if that's the job, he nailed it.
He totally nailed it. And I'm not even sure if he was really that much disliked as much as those guys didn't dislike him. And they're telling their story. Remember, Jerry's not here. He's not alive. He's not ever to defend himself. But he constructed a team that was iconic. And so there's got to be some people that liked him.
No question. No. And he could identify talent as well as absolutely anybody. All right. Crosstalk with George Sedano is coming up next. Those are the names, aren't there? It's Shula, it's Belichick, and it's Landry.
Yeah, I think it is. And obviously – both Shula and Landry are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Belichick is in. He's just still coaching right now. When you look at the legendary coach and Don Shula, who certainly has won plenty of games, and you know, just when you look at his coaching career, a long time. I mean, it's a long, long, long time. I mean, he had, what was it, a 40-year run or something like that as a coach? I mean, like, come on. He was one of those guys that was a lifer in terms of speaking of the Miami area and the Miami Dolphins in particular. They've released or at least contingent upon a plan for fans and spectators of sort to join the Dolphins as the season takes place, I guess, in September, where they're paring it down. They're talking about paring it down to about 15,000 entries, things of that nature, George, to be able to go to the Miami Dolphins games. They're going to have different times and hopefully get people to be able to go to the games. Is that a good plan to have?
I think it's a good plan to have. I'm just curious to see if they're going to be able to implement it. But I'm hopeful, like everyone else. I've been an optimist when it comes to this stuff, that we could be in a position to have sports. I always assumed it would be without fans. If you can include fans, even if it's 15,000 in a 65,000 seat stadium, then I guess that would work if you could do it in an orderly fashion. I would wonder, though, Key, is going in and out, right? Going in may be one thing, but definitely going out could be a real challenge based on emotion, how hopped up people are on alcohol and things of that nature. I think that would be a bigger challenge as opposed to, you know, spreading them out when they're actually in the stadium.
Well, you probably, and I haven't seen their plan, right? We haven't seen it. We're just hearing about it. But you certainly could, like, gate off, like if you're going through Section A, for instance. A is, that's where it's at. The parking lot is right off A. That rope says you're going right out of that tunnel, A, right out to parking lot 15, straight out, and that's where you're going. There is no going left or going right. It's like a straight line out of each section that they put fans in so they can get in and out of the stadiums at a certain time. And letting them out of the stadium just like you let them in. Stagger it from a time standpoint. The Section A leaves at 15 minutes after the game. Section B leaves 20 minutes after the game. And just do it like that.
I would think that alcohol could be part of the equation, George. Like, we're having enough issues getting people to social distance, period.
Right.
The idea that you're going to be in the stadium in football and there's going to be alcohol available, I just think that if they're going to do this plan, you can't create a situation where people can be encouraged via their drinking to continue to break rules once they get rolling.
No, yeah, but I'm sure they're not going to, George, I'm sure they're not going to let you freelance. You're going to have, it's going to be sectioned off where you got to stay in that particular area and section.
Yeah, look, I saw the report, and I saw a little more detailed report than I think the one ESPN had from one of the Miami papers, and it basically said, Key, that they would allow them out kind of like you would deplane off a plane, right? Row by row, or plane, or get on a plane, right? Row by row, and they would do it that
way.
What
planes you getting on?
Well, you're on the first
no,
group.
He goes first.
Yeah. What page was it when you went to, what color was the page of the computer screen when you went to the bank, Key? It was yellow,
no,
right?
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So I think you've got the yellow screen when you get on the plane too. So it's a little different for the rest of us. But yeah, I think that's their plan, is to kind of get people in and out like you would on a plane. Look, also the question becomes this: if you're only going to let 15,000 people in, I would imagine there'll be season ticket holders, right? But they have more than 15,000 season ticket holders. Like, how do you even go about that?
You rotate it.
Well, maybe those are the only maybe those are the only people that they're letting in, the season ticket holders.
You rotate it based on last names. So maybe one home game is vowels, next is consonants, maybe it's A through F. Like, I'm sure you can get creative in terms of finding that out. I'm concerned about the people who have to work these games as well. You know, they have to go to someone and tell them that they have to wait to get in, that they have to wait to leave, that they can't to certain sections. Like, I'm also wondering what kind of support are those low-income people going to get in terms of working these games.
We all know that fans are on their best behavior at the end of games. I can't imagine what could go wrong. I mean, it's going to be – look, if we get to the point where we have to figure out how to get the fans in and out in an orderly manner, great. That means we're playing football. This is a second tier.
What are they going to play? They're going
to
play football,
get
coach.
Figured out. Well, I think so
to
too.
Play football.
I think so too. Not... But if they're already putting plans in place or trying to figure out the snafus and what the plans might be to try to iron those out beforehand, this is a really good sign that they've already moved on to the fan portion of the equation.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, as much as I just want
George,
to see
George, tell your crying
back,
kids to be quiet, man.
I know, man. It's the little guy. He's like, you know what? I didn't close the door. It's my fault. Hold on.
It's all good.
I can
good,
still
man.
Hear him.
It's all good. It's like, what is he saying? What is he complaining about? What is he saying?
George, you're not feeding your kids, man. What are you doing? No, I heard you could barely hear him in the background. Barely. Just enough.
Yeah. I told him Uncle Key said to shut up.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely.
George, what did you think of the Last Dance last night, George? What was the big takeaway for you?
Oh, man. It was, I thought the best episode or episodes that they'd done, it was super fast paced. Look, obviously the beginning, the Kobe stuff, you know, hit home, I think, for a lot of people. It just feels still weird, I think, to talk about him in the past tense, to see him on the screen discussing it, to see Michael talking about him in the locker room after only being in the league for a year and a half. The way he was talking about him was pretty hilarious. That was great. And obviously what we've talked about, right? Like the Tony Kukoc stuff with the Dream Team, more of the Isaiah stuff. And honestly, the unsanitized stuff with Michael's life, the gambling, the stuff with Jesse Helms. I thought that whether you agree or disagree with his positioning on any of that, I thought the fact they talked about it was interesting.
He didn't have a gambling problem. What do you mean?
Competitive problem.
Uh-huh. Yes, that is correct. You're right. With me, George. That's what I tried to tell Knucklehead. That it was
the
a competitive
biggest
problem.
Whitewash ever, a competitive problem. I can't not throw quarters against the wall because I'm too competitive. Right. Makes perfect sense. The Sedano Show is coming up next. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 6:00.